please report. My name is Rebecca Houghton, and I'm representing Jeanette Owasi. The main issue before you today is whether the immigration judge's finding that Ms. Owasi lacked credibility and failed to sustain her burden of proof is supported by substantial evidence. It is our contention that it is not supported by substantial evidence, but that in fact the evidence in the record is consistent, plausible, and sufficiently detailed for her to compel this court that she has established statutory eligibility for asylum. Specifically, the immigration judge questioned Ms. Owasi's credibility because in regards to three documents, a national identification card, a letter from Frida, and a form I-20.
Did he also raise the issue of the fact that her sister had been granted asylum and none of that information came into the evidence?
Well, he did take judicial notice of the fact that she had brought in a letter that stated that her sister had been approved, but not that she didn't have her application there. Francine, though, was scheduled to testify, and it is our position that Ms. Owasi had two theories for asylum here, both which are valid. One which is based on family-based persecution, and another which is her own individual claim, which is that she was persecuted on account of her ethnicity when she was raped by the government soldiers. Now, Francine's testimony arguably is corroborative of the events surrounding her family-based persecution claim. However, there is no evidence in the record to show that Francine would have been able to corroborate the claim that she was raped by Hutu soldiers at gunpoint. The judge even says in his decision, it is clear that Ms. Owasi suffered persecution and acts separate from Ms. Owasi. So, in regards to the three documents and the inconsistencies that the immigration judge found and the adverse credibility that he drew from that should not be deferred to by this court because these findings were based on erroneous interpretations of the testimony, improper assumptions, as well as evidence not contained in the record. Specifically regarding the national identification document, Ms. Owasi, or the judge interpreted her testimony to be that the government soldiers stole her or took her national identification card at the time she was raped and that Frida helped her obtain a replacement. He therefore found her testimony to be unbelievable because she couldn't have applied for replacement of a card in November of 1996 when the card wasn't taken from her until December of 1996. But the record is clear. This was a mistake and confusion by the immigration judge. On direct cross and rigorous cross-examination by the immigration judge, she said that it was not her national ID that was taken from her, but a different ID. Therefore, we cannot defer to that finding, or we ask that you not defer to that finding. In regards to the letter from Frida, Ms. Owasi testified that her father was dead and that her family members were missing. Then she also submitted a corroborating letter that stated this. However, the judge found because this letter had a business stamp from the father's business on the letter, that meant that the family members weren't alive and that the father, in fact, might not have been murdered. There is not any evidence in the record to support this finding. In fact, there is testimony through two asylum applications and her testimony that, yes, her father is dead and she cannot find her other family members. And just because there is a stamp and the fact that Frida has access to it doesn't mean that the father is alive. Many times companies continue long after the owners or the founders have died. And it is just an illogical assumption made by the immigration judge because it contradicts the very content of the letter, which states that the father is dead and that she cannot find family members. And in regards to the form I-20, the third document with which the immigration judge believed had raised issues of credibility, that document was never even submitted into evidence. Therefore, it would be improper for the immigration judge to base a finding on a document that was not submitted into evidence. And finally, the I-120 is a collateral issue. It goes towards her means of escape from Rwanda, not her asylum claim. And based on these adverse credibility findings, the immigration judge believed that Ms. Owasi needed to provide more corroborating evidence to support her claim. Well, that is not supported by the record because she was credible. All of the questions that he raised were unfounded. And the record shows as well that she testified that she provided two asylum applications, her own testimony, background documents evincing her identity, and background material that establish her claim for asylum and that there is no one who can corroborate her claim. There are no witnesses that can corroborate her claim. The record supports the fact that Jean was not even in Rwanda at the time that these events took place, and that Francine, she was not reunited with Mr. Wassey until long after this rape occurred.
But Francine was listed as a witness to testify.
She was a witness, as, yes, Your Honor.
And there was initially there was no request to continue it because she couldn't testify.
When it became clear that the judge found that her testimony was going to be critical, the attorney at that time asked if the judge deemed this testimony to be critical to please grant a continuance.
And the proffered excuse was she had a stomach ailment.
That she was unable to come due to illness. Yes. And there's nothing in the, even if in the record there is no evidence also that Francine will be able to corroborate the events specific to Ms. Owasi's claim. And the fact that she was unable to go due to a sickness and to send this woman back to Rwanda where she has suffered atrocious persecution as a teenager and has no one there to care for her would just be unconscionable.
Let me ask you, if we agreed with you that this was, you know, hopelessly mishandled by the agency, what is next? Now, conditions have changed in Rwanda. Does she have to show not only that she was persecuted, but also that despite this change of conditions, she still faces a real danger?
Your Honor, when someone is able to satisfy that they have suffered past persecution, there is a presumption that they have a well-founded fear of future persecution. In order for it is the government's burden by preponderance of the evidence to overcome that by possibly saying that there has been changed country
right.
conditions. There is nothing in the record that the government has produced.
Right, but would they have a chance to do that? If we reverse, do they then get a chance to rebut?
I don't know if they, what we would want.
No, you don't know whether they want to, but would they have the right to? Are you asking us to, in effect, grant her asylum or just send it back to the Immigration Service for further proceedings that might include a determination of whether conditions have so changed in Rwanda that she wouldn't be in danger?
We would state that if this court could grant her asylum, that's what we would like, because you can have an asylum claim based on just past persecution.
I understand, but as you said, the government has this right of rebuttal. Now, have they waived it, or would they still?
I believe they have waived it by not submitting anything into the record at the time of the hearing to rebut the fact that she suffered past persecution. And we would ask that this court grant her asylum, and in the event that you cannot do that, to remand it to the board to grant her statutory withholding of removal and to exercise their discretion in her application for asylum.
Okay, well, thank you, Ms. Houghton. Mr. DeCastro?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I am Anthony DeCastro and represent the respondent, the Attorney General, in this case. The issue before this Court is relatively straightforward, and that is whether the petitioner carried her burden of demonstrating that she suffered past persecution on account of either her gender, her imputed political opinion, or as a member of a particular social group. She has failed to do so.
Because of credibility, right?
Because of the burden of proof, Your Honor. The immigration judge did not make an explicit adverse credibility finding. That is, he did not say, I just don't believe you. He says, I have serious concerns about the evidence you're presenting.
Well, one of those concerns was about this ID, the national ID and the student ID. Would you agree that the record, if we look at it closely as your opponent wants us to, would indicate that he had misapprehended those facts?
Your Honor, there's a lot of testimony within that thing, and there seems to be, at first blush, it was pretty clear-cut during the examination that there was only one identification card. And through the cross-examination, the Department of Homeland Security attorney took her through to make sure there was only one card that we were talking about. At that particular time came out the conclusion that the one she says she was confiscated in December of 96 was really issued in November of 1996, and that November card is in the certified administrative record. At first she tried to explain that issue concerning that November 20th date, and that was when it was processed, not actually when it was given. Perhaps that was not making enough headway during her immigration hearing, and that she came up with this second account that there were, in fact, two IDs, one that is in the record, the national identification card, and this other identification document, which is not in the record, which has never been presented to an immigration court, that was somehow connected to her student visa. So,
I don't know the member of a student visa, but it was a student ID that she said she left in Rwanda.
Right, something that she needed for her student, in fact, to get her student visa, whether it was I don't know if it was a student ID, but it was a second identification document that was discussed. That's correct, Your Honor. So, at first, she offered an explanation as to why this card, no, that's not my card. Really, it was only processed, and here is my identification card, and I received it afterwards. And then came this second elaboration of events that there was a second ID. So, there wasn't really much confusion on the identification card, as there was two separate identification documents that the immigration judge was trying to work his way through with the help of the examination.
But his handling of this leaves a lot to be done. I'm particularly bothered by this business of calling up to find out whether Francine was really sick.
Well, Your Honor, I'm not sure.
That's really absurd.
Your Honor, I'm not really sure he called to see if she was really sick. I think he accepted the fact that she was.
It's a serious business, and just to call up, and if the person doesn't answer, say, well, too bad,
Well,
back to Rwanda for you.
Well, Your Honor, it wasn't that simple. In fact, the immigration judge said Francine's testimony is important. I'd like to hear it. Is there any way we can hear it? And mind you,
then why did he deny the continuance?
Well, Your Honor, it's an interesting point. It's arguable that a continuance was never requested from.
But on the one hand, he's handling this very informally by calling up a witness, which is not something judges usually do. And on the other hand, as usual, the agency tracks out all these ridiculous formalities. Now you say, well, it wasn't a formal request for continuance. And also, I find incomprehensible is the failure of the Board of Immigration Appeals to mention the new evidence.
Your Honor,
what's going on here?
Can I take your first point first, as far as the continuance? I don't share the opinion that the immigration judge was haphazardly calling the witness to test to see if she was in fact home and sick. I mean, I think it's pretty clear from the moment that the immigration hearing started, which she was on the witness list and was going to testify, and in fact the petitioner testified that she's been sick for a week, not just that. It wasn't something that automatically or came up the day before the hearing. He called us and said, well, do you have a phone number? Can I call? I understand maybe she couldn't come here because she was sick. Maybe we can get her testimony by phone. It's important at the beginning of the hearing, the counsel for the petitioner or the petitioner didn't see that this was a real significance because they never asked for a continuance. So they never said, Your Honor, we have a main witness. I just found out about her. She is sick at home. Can I have a few days? That was never put on the record at all. It was only at the urging of the immigration judge's insistence to hear her testimony that this issue of perhaps I need some more time came up. Whether it's a request for continuance or not is really irrelevant, Your Honor, and I agree with you on that.
This is a federal agency handling serious matters in a most haphazard fashion.
Well, Your Honor, on the new evidence.
Especially since I've noticed this before, these immigration judges seem to have no conception of how some of these of life in some of these countries. A place like Rwanda, that's a deeply disordered part of the world. You don't expect, to have papers that are in order, and the notion of attaching significance to this stamp and
Your Honor, if I may, he did attach significance to the country conditions. In fact, in his report, he says that they're plausible conditions.
No, you know what? I think it's kind of a giveaway here is when he starts off by saying, yeah. It says, respondent indicates persecution began in 1994, the death of the former Rwandan president killed in a mysterious plane crash. Eventually, this death resulted in a killing spree. There are 800,000 people killed in Rwanda. That is not a spree.
Yes, Your Honor.
There is an insensitivity on the part of this immigration judge and this board to the conditions under which people like Uwazi lived in Rwanda and came to this country. Now, you know, she may be faking all this and so on, and Francine is healthy and all that stuff, but how can we have any confidence from a record like this?
Your Honor, I think your points are well taken, and I think the immigration judge, in his opinion, I think at page 64, says, the background in which she's giving me her personal sign claim is accurate. I mean, she's not disputing the conditions that are going on in Rwanda. At no point does he say, I don't believe that these conditions are going on. He accepts the backdrop on which she places her asylum claim on. That is not at issue at all, Your Honor, in this particular
case. Well, pages 64 and 65 were among the most bizarre in this record when they're arguing about Kabungo and Kalumbo and Mugasira and all this. I mean, it's just, what does that have to do with anything?
Well, Your Honor, I think he wanted to put...
He didn't know anything about this country and...
Well, he did have the State Department country condition report as evidence in the record, and so he did have something to put this asylum claim on the backdrop of, and he accepted that. He accepted the conditions in Rwanda. I mean,
now, why didn't the board mention this evidence? So here, okay, so Francine doesn't answer the phone... Judge doesn't grant a continuance, and so naturally what they try to do later is supplement the record with an affidavit. Now, that may be too late, may be unconvincing, so why doesn't the board at least mention it?
Well, Your Honor, I think for a number...
Now, how do we have any confidence that there was any actual review by the board, as opposed to just rubber stamping?
Your Honor, I believe I have actual confidences in the three documents that were submitted. One was from an affidavit from Francine, who lives with the petitioner 14 months after the immigration hearing. She certainly could have presented some affidavit at the time. It's not like she was in Rwanda. She was here in the United States. In fact, she was living with the petitioner.
Well, why didn't the board say that?
The board doesn't need to say that, Your Honor. If they look at it and say it's not, and they consider it a motion to remand, because it was considered together with the appeal and the appeal was still pending, there was nothing new about it. All this evidence could have been presented at the immigration
hearing. No, because at the immigration hearing, they didn't realize until too late that Francine wasn't going to show up and that the judge was going to attach significance to her absence. So it's going to be after that, whether it's a month after or 14 months, that they try to submit this new evidence. Look, the hearing was chaos. It would be extremely natural for someone at the end of the hearing to say, look, this is going off the rails. I have to get new evidence and put it together and submit it. And maybe 14 months is too long.
Perhaps, Your Honor. I see my time is up.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. DeCastro. DeCastro. Ms. Houghton, how much time does she have?
In response to what the government's counsel said the issue concerning whether her explanation regarding the reasonableness of the document being issued at one time and received at a later time is, while we contend it is very reasonable, it also isn't the decision on which the immigration judge based his decision, so it should not be reviewed by this court today. Regarding the student identification, I believe that was mischaracterized. She never said that she needed the student identification to get her student visa. She said she needed the student identification to enroll in school. And finally, it is clear from the record that the immigration judge says that Ms. Iwasi failed to meet her burden of proof, quote, by virtue of the questions raised by the documents submitted.
So, again, to get back to the question I asked your opposing counsel, it was a credibility determination. You just didn't believe her, right?
He didn't believe her, and then he believed that because she had to come up with other evidence because she wasn't believable to overcome that presumption. But he specifically says she has sufficient reasons and plausible grounds for asylum, but for these questions raised. As we've shown, these questions were unfounded, and therefore she satisfied her burden of proof. The immigration judge says it himself in the record. Therefore, we request that this court please grant Ms. Iwasi asylum. To do otherwise would be, as Judge Posner said, Rwanda is a place like no other, where it was not just a killing spree, but a genocide.
Well, but
send a girl back at 14, where she suffered unspeakably at 14, would be unconscionable.
But it seems to me your argument, though, that if there was a remand, that the government could not put into evidence that there was a democratic election and that things that may not be perfect, but certainly are not perfect, but there's sort of a truce between the Tutsis and the Hutus, and that the government couldn't offer that as a rebuttal to a claim of future persecution.
Well, it would be our position that they did not put in evidence to rebut that presumption at the time. Therefore, she
said... Yeah, but the hearing was 3 years ago.
Right, but then if the government would like to file a motion to reopen, which they are allowed to do based on changed country conditions in Rwanda, that is their choice, and the BIA can make that decision. But as for now, she satisfied her burden.
You would be at least satisfied with a remand, first one remand.
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Thompson and Mr. Nicastro.